All right, so we're diving into a case today that really kind of throws a wrench into the gears of American politics.
Oh,
Bears
yeah.
v. Jubilee, we're
Okay.
talking gerrymandering, right? That
Yeah.
sneaky practice where politicians redraw voting district lines and you end up with shapes that sometimes look like they belong in a modern art museum.
Yeah.
I mean, you've probably heard the term.
Sure.
But today we're going to go deep, deep into how this case grappled with whether courts can actually step in and stop this political maneuvering.
Well, what I think is so fascinating about Vieth is that it really kind of throws into sharp relief this tension between the ideal of fair elections and the very real power of politics,
All
right?
right.
It's about the limits of the court's power to intervene in something that is inherently political.
Absolutely. And so picture this, right?
Okay.
It's 2004. We're in Pennsylvania, fresh off the 2000 census.
Okay.
And the state has to redraw its congressional district maps because they lost two seats. Sounds like a routine procedure, right?
Yeah.
But hold on to your hats because this is where things take a sharp turn.
So the Republican-controlled state legislature
Right.
passed a plan, Act One,
Act One.
and the Democrats cried foul, claiming it was blatantly designed to give the GOP an unfair
What
advantage
is?
in upcoming elections.
Right.
They argued that the map was drawn to dilute the voting power of Democratic voters.
So enter our plaintiffs, three registered Democrats, Richard Veith, Norma Jean Veith, and Susan Fury.
Okay.
They decided to take this fight to court, alleging that this new redistricting plan violated a fundamental principle,
Right.
the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment.
Yeah.
They essentially argued, like, hey, this map is silencing our voices and rigging the game in favor of Republicans.
So their argument really centered around the idea that this redistricting plan
Right.
was designed to create a system where their votes would carry less weight than those of Republican voters, violating their right to equal protection under the law.
You can't just draw lines on a map to give one party a permanent advantage. At least that's not how a fair democracy is supposed to work.
Right.
So what did the courts have to say about all of this?
Well, the district court actually dismissed their case.
What?
They said there wasn't a clear legal standard to measure whether or not partisan gerrymandering had actually taken place.
Oh, wow.
It's like trying to nail down jelly to a wall.
Yeah.
How do you define and measure something as slippery as partisan intent in drawing district lines?
Right, so this case was too big to just fade away, so it went straight to the Supreme Court.
Okay.
And buckle up, this is where the real legal drama
Oh,
unfolds.
yeah.
The justices were deeply divided on this one, and their opinions, I think, reveal a lot about the challenges of navigating this politically charged issue.
To really grasp the significance of Vieth, we need to talk about justiciability.
Okay.
It's this crucial legal concept that asks, can the courts even make a decision on this particular issue? So in the context of Vieth, it boils down to this: can the courts actually step in and say, this political map is too messed up, we're fixing it? Or is this something that should be left to the legislature?
It's almost as if the court was grappling with the very definition of its role in a democracy.
Yeah.
On one hand, if politicians are manipulating the system to stay in power, doesn't that undermine the very foundation of fair elections?
Right.
But on the other hand, do we want unelected judges meddling in how our elections are run?
Yeah.
That's where things get sticky.
Exactly. And that's precisely why Vieth is so compelling.
Yeah.
The case wasn't just about Pennsylvania. It was
Right.
about the power of the courts to police partisan gerrymandering anywhere in the U.S. The justices were wrestling with where the line is drawn between upholding democratic principles and respecting the separation of powers.
So let's unpack these opinions because they really reveal, I think, the heart of the debate
Okay.
and highlight just how divided the court was on this issue. Let's start with the opinion that essentially said, hands off when it comes to the courts intervening in partisan gerrymandering.
Okay, so leading the charge against judicial intervention was Justice Scalia.
Scalia, okay.
He wrote the plurality opinion, meaning he had the support of four justices,
Though.
but not a majority of the nine.
Gotcha.
He's known for his textualist approach to interpreting the Constitution, sticking closely to the words themselves,
Right.
and his view that courts should generally avoid wading into political disputes.
So Scalia was essentially saying, this is too messy,
Yeah.
too political for us to handle.
Yeah.
Let the politicians sort it out themselves.
Exactly.
Okay.
His opinion emphasized the difficulty, if not the impossibility, of creating a workable standard
Right.
for judging when partisan gerrymandering has gone too far.
Yeah.
He went as far as suggesting that a previous case, Davis v. Bandemer, which had allowed these types of claims to be heard in court, should be overturned. He saw it as leading to years of legal wrangling with no clear resolution in sight.
Scalia actually had a pretty strong quote about this whole issue, calling it 18 years of pointless litigation.
Yeah.
You can practically hear the frustration in his words.
That quote really highlights the crux of his argument.
Yeah.
He believed that courts simply lack the tools to create a manageable and fair standard for judging partisan gerrymandering.
Okay.
In his view, getting involved would drag the judiciary into a political quagmire with no clear exit strategy.
So we have Scalia in his camp saying courts should stay out of it.
Right.
But what about the other justices?
Yeah.
Surely there were some who felt differently about the court's role in this whole gerrymandering mess, right?
You're absolutely right. Justice Kennedy, who often played the role of the swing vote on the court, actually agreed with the outcome of the case, dismissing the lawsuit. But he didn't entirely agree with Scalia's reasoning.
This is where the plot thickens, right?
Mm.
Kennedy's concurrence,
mm.
his agreement with the outcome, but not necessarily the reasoning, mm. kept this whole debate alive.
That's precisely it. He didn't think the plaintiffs in VF had presented a standard for measuring partisan gerrymandering that would actually work in practice. But, and this is crucial, he held out hope that some standard could be found in the future, perhaps one tied to First Amendment rights. He left the door open just a crack, suggesting that the courts might be able to intervene under the right circumstances.
So while he wasn't ready to jump into the fray head first in this particular case, he wasn't closing the door on the possibility of courts playing a role in policing partisan gerrymandering in the future.
Exactly. Kennedy's concurrence was like a little beacon of hope for those who believed that the courts had a responsibility to protect voters from extreme partisan gerrymandering. It set the stage for later cases like Gill v. Whitford, which tried to tackle this issue again with near legal arguments and a more refined approach.
So we've got Scalia saying absolutely not to courts getting involved and Kennedy saying, well, maybe someday under the right conditions. That leaves the four dissenting justices. What did they have to say about all of this?
The dissenting justices, Stevens, Souter, Ginsburg, and Breyer, each wrote their own opinions, all arguing that courts should, in fact, step in and address partisan gerrymandering. They saw it as a very real threat to fair elections and believed that the courts had a duty to protect the rights of voters who were being marginalized by this practice.
They were essentially saying, we understand that this is a thorny issue, but we can't just sit back and allow politicians to manipulate the system to entrench themselves in power. They must have had some ideas about how to approach this, right?
Absolutely. Each of the dissenting justices proposed different tests or standards for measuring when partisan gerrymandering crosses the line. Some focused on the intent behind the redistricting plan, while others emphasized the effects of the plan on the voting power of different groups. This really highlights the core challenge of defining fairness in this area. It's not as simple as just looking at a map and saying, the shape looks weird, it must be unfair.
So the Supreme Court was completely split on this issue. A real legal showdown with no clear victor. What happened next? Did the fight against gerrymandering just fizzle out after this?
Not at all. VF may not have provided a definitive answer, but it certainly shifted the battleground in a big way. The decision effectively shut down federal court challenges to partisan gerrymandering, at least for a time. But it didn't mean that those who saw gerrymandering as a threat to democracy were going to give up.
It makes sense that people would continue to fight back. After all, as long as elections exist and district lines need to be drawn, there's always going to be that temptation for politicians to try to use those lines to their advantage.
You're exactly right. VF forced those challenging gerrymandering to get creative and find new avenues for their fight. Some turned their attention to state courts, which in some cases were more open to hearing these types of claims. We saw some significant victories at the state level, with courts in places like North Carolina and Pennsylvania striking down gerrymandered maps and ordering the creation of new, fairer ones.
So while the federal courts were taking a step back, state courts became a new battleground in the fight against gerrymandering. That's interesting to see how the fight shifted to a different level of the judicial system.
It is. And that's not all. VF also fueled a surge in citizen-led reform efforts across the country. People started demanding more transparency and fairness in the redistricting process, pushing for things like independent redistricting commissions. The idea was to take the power to draw district lines out of the hands of partisan legislatures and give it to a more neutral body.
So it was a case of, okay, if the federal courts won't do anything about this, we'll take it to the states and we'll work to change the rules of the game ourselves. That grassroots energy is really inspiring, showing how a Supreme Court decision can spark action and change at the local level.
It's a great example of how legal battles can influence and inspire social movements. And those citizen-led reform efforts have had a real impact in many states. They've helped to create more balanced and representative districts, and they've shown that people are paying attention to this issue and demanding that our elections be fair.
Veith didn't mark the end of gerrymandering or even the end of legal challenges to it. It simply made the fight more complex, pushing the battle into different arenas. It became a multi-front war, with legal challenges happening alongside grassroots organizing and legislative reforms.
Precisely. And the legacy of Veith is a mixed bag. On the one hand, some argue that it emboldened those who were already inclined to engage in aggressive partisan gerrymandering. The 2010 redistricting cycle, which happened after Veith, saw some of the most extreme examples of gerrymandering in recent history.
It's like some politicians saw Veith as green light to push the boundaries even further, thinking, if the federal courts aren't going to stop us, why hold back?
That's one interpretation of the aftermath. And the Supreme Court later confirmed the core holding of Veith in another case, Rucho v. Common Cause, decided in 2019. But, and this is a significant caveat, they didn't entirely close the door on legal challenges to partisan gerrymandering. They specifically left open the possibility of challenges based on state constitutions, which is where a lot of the legal action has been focused since then.
So while Veith may have limited the role of federal courts in policing partisan gerrymandering, it didn't give politicians free rein to manipulate the system without any consequences. State courts and state-level reforms continue to be important tools in the fight for fair elections.
Exactly. Veith might not have resolved this debate once and for all, but it certainly helped to shape the landscape of this ongoing battle for fair representation. And it reminds us that vigilance is key. We can't take our right to vote for granted, and we need to be aware of the ways in which that right can be undermined.
Veith leaves us with a lot to think about: the role of the courts, the power of grassroots activism, and the fundamental importance of fair elections in a democracy. It's a case that goes beyond legal arguments and forces us to confront some big questions about how our system of government works and how we can ensure that every vote truly counts.
I think Veith v. Jubilier really forces us to grapple with this fundamental question.
Yeah.
Is the court abdicating its duty to ensure fair elections,
right,
by refusing to fully engage with this issue of partisan gerrymandering? Or are they wisely exercising restraint, recognizing the limits of their power and acknowledging that some issues are inherently political?
It's a tough call, and it's almost as if the justices are saying, we're here to interpret the law, not to referee political games, you know?
Right.
No matter how unfair those games might seem.
Right.
But then how can we reconcile that with the idea that everybody's vote should count equally?
Yeah, and that's where I think Justice Scalia's quote about 18 years of pointless litigation really hits home.
Yeah.
It reveals this deep skepticism about the ability of courts to come up with clear, workable standards for something as complex and politically charged as partisan gerrymandering.
Right.
But then you have Justice Kennedy's glimmer of hope,
right,
that maybe, just maybe, there's a way for the courts to address this issue without overstepping their bounds.
It really does leave you wondering where you draw the line.
Yeah.
Is there a point at which gerrymandering becomes so egregious,
yeah,
so blatantly unfair, that the courts have a responsibility to step in? Where do you land on this debate?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And I think Veith makes it clear that this isn't just a legal question.
Right.
It's a fundamental question about how our democracy functions, you know? The fight for fair elections is far from over.
Absolutely. As long as politicians have the power to draw these district lines,
yeah,
the temptation to use that power for their own advantage will always be there.
Right.
So what can we do? If the courts aren't always the answer, where do we go from here?
Well, I think Veith also shows us that the courts aren't the only players in this game.
Right.
Citizen-led reform efforts, state-level challenges, and even Congress itself can all play a role in pushing back against extreme partisan gerrymandering.
So it's not just about lawsuits and legal arguments.
Mm-hmm.
It's about raising public awareness,
mm-hmm,
demanding accountability from our elected officials, and maybe even changing the way we approach redistricting altogether.
Exactly. And that's something for all of us to think about.
Yeah.
How can we ensure that every vote counts? That our elections truly reflect the will of the people. Because at the end of the day, that's what's at stake.
Veith v. Jubilier might not give us all the answers, but it certainly raises some vital questions that we need to keep grappling with.
Yeah.
It's a reminder that this fight for fair elections is ongoing, and we all have a part to play in ensuring that our democracy lives up to its ideals.